a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. It's the David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Friday the 22nd of May, year of our Lord, 2026. Well, today we've got a couple of very interesting interviews I think you're going to want to catch. We're going to be talking to Clyde Lewis. You may remember him. He's been a radio commentator and a host for quite some time. He's had some health issues. He's back now. But for a long time, he has talked about paranormal. So I thought let's get him on and talk about how he perceives what Trump is doing with UFO stuff. So we're talking about that as well. And we also have a candidate for governor here in Tennessee running against Marsha Blackburn. And, of course, Marsha is all about digital ID, digital money. And so we're going to talk to Monty Fritz about nullification, property tax, which I think there's a property tax revolt in the works right now. And, of course, a bill that he did about chemtrails, or as he puts it, geoengineering. He pointed out, he said, you know, all this stuff they're putting up there, what goes up does come down. We've got to be concerned about that. We're going to start with Iran and what Trump is doing with this slush fund. That's right, as one person characterized it, it's beyond corruption. It is a smash and grab robbery. He's just a thug. I'll be right back. Yeah, let's talk about the commander and thief. And it's really what Trump is doing. Just to show you what this guy cares about is money and money only. Seriously, I mean, it is, and I've mentioned this all the time, but Trump is the poster child for the fact that the love of money is the root of all evil. And I think his love and obsession with money is going to be his downfall, frankly. But just take a look at the merchandise that he's done. He has done, I don't go to his website, look at it. He has launched 600 and 22 products the crime family has. And that's just since the start of his second term. He's made $8.8 million. Folks, that is chicken feed. He is going to pay himself twice that with this slush fund. I mean, not twice, 2,000 times that. 2,000 times $8.8 million. That helps you to put in perspective what this this billions of dollars is really all about. And
that's not even counting the massive amounts of money that his family has wisely made with their brilliant investments.
Yeah, timely. In crypto and in foreign governments, right? Yeah, that's none of this is counting the crypto stuff. None of this is counting the 3,700 stock trades. And none of this is counting whoever's making a fortune in the prediction markets. you know, betting on whether or not he's going to go to war with this country or that one and what the time is and so forth. I wonder if that includes his rainbow LGBT merchandise that is there, because that was from the end of the first term. I wonder if they still got that up there. It'd be interesting to see. But
they probably took it down for the election. Maybe they put it back up by now.
You know, he is trolling his people. I mean, he constantly plays this the gay national anthem, YMCA, and he knows exactly what he's doing. He really is trolling people, and that's one of the things that John Stewart said. Everything this guy does is a troll. He's just trolling us, stealing this money this way. But it's not just all of that. Think about this. $100 million in terms of IRS penalties have just disappeared as well. And so that's, you know, 12 times the amount of what he has made in merchandise. How about that? Just in penalties from the IRS. The IRS said that he had claimed many of the same losses twice. Yeah, you only get to take that out once. Trump's response to that was that this is a disgrace. It's a disgrace to point that out. This is exactly the type of approach that has worked for him. I don't know how well it worked for Pam Bondi, and I don't know how well it's going to work for Pete Hegseth, but that's, you ask them, you come to them with a direct question, they just attack you back. You are a disgrace at the IRS for pointing out that I took the same losses multiple times. But let me say this. You know, one of the things that's going to let him get away with this is that this is being his critics And they're Republican critics as well as Democrat critics. They're out there saying, this is horrific. We're going to give people who have been convicted of attacking police officers on January the 6th, we're going to give them money. This is a head fake, in my opinion. Because this is fundamentally about Trump suing the IRS for releasing tax return documents. And it wasn't the IRS that did it. It was the IRS's contractor that did it. Now, of course, they're responsible for what their contractors do. Nevertheless, this is not targeted to Trump. This is targeted to rich people, as I've pointed out many times. George Soros, who didn't pay any income taxes 3 years running. Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, similar things. All these guys. Bloomberg was in there. Gates was in there. All of the typical usual suspects and villains of the right that look at this, all these leftist villains like Soros and so forth, they were also exposed. It had nothing to do with politics. It had nothing to do with any animus towards Donald Trump. It had to do with these people not paying taxes because the tax system is set up to tax you and I, not the rich elite. And so that's what that was about. None of these other billionaires came after the IRS. Only Trump. And he came after it with a magic number of $10 billion. And then he has his personal lawyer that he's put in as the attorney general comes in and throws this out, does a deal. I tell you what, I'll negotiate with myself. How about that? Well, Judge Napolitano has some issues with it, not just constitutional issues, but, of course, legal absurdities. This is a conflict of interest on steroids, folks. It's so bad, it is really literally robbery and looting, and he's doing it in our face. We should all be outraged about this. Let's stop this tribalism for a little while, and let's get back to a little bit of honesty, at least if we can't have honesty. Let's get the shame back. People used to do these types of things in secret. Now he does it in the open. You ought to at least be ashamed of it, even if he's not going to have to pay any penalty or go to jail for any of this stuff. And so it is his acting attorney general, who has been his longtime personal attorney, Todd Blanche. And again, he is acting attorney general. He's not a real attorney general. He's just playing one on TV. Unfortunately, he has the real powers. And what's going to be coming next from Trump and his Todd Blanche, his personal lawyer, is going to be a pardon for Ghislaine Maxwell. You know, this is the same guy who went to Ghislaine Maxwell when she was in a real prison, spent a very long time with her, and the next thing you know, she's transported to Club Fed. So that's the thing that's coming. But here's the point that Judge Napolitano made. He said there's two issues here. The first one is that this isn't a real lawsuit. You can't be both the plaintiff and the defendant at the same time. That is an absurdity. And that's one of the reasons why everybody's looking at this and saying, what is going on? Even Trump said, hey, this is kind of interesting. I can pay myself. I can sue myself, and then I can agree that, yes, I am due to be compensated for that. And that's exactly what is happening here. He said, no person can be on both sides of a lawsuit. Todd Blanche has very serious ethical issues because he signed this agreement knowing he works for the plaintiff. That is issue number one. As a matter of fact, the person, a very high-ranking official that is in the Justice Department, resigned, and it looks like he resigned in disgust and protest. However, just like the head of South Command, who resigned as Hegseth started murdering people in the Caribbean, and it is murder, folks. It is not a declared war. These people were not combatants, and they even went to the extent of after they attacked non-combatants who were not shooting at them, they came back, circled back, and executed the shipwrecked people in the water. So, yeah, you had the former head of those operations resigned, hasn't said anything at all about it. Similar situation at the Department of Justice over this outrage. So he said, so that's the first issue. That's issue number one. You cannot be on both sides of a lawsuit. This is an absurdity. He said the second issue, which is pointed out by Senator Fetterman, he said, where's this money coming from? Congress didn't authorize this. He said the Obama fund that Trump regime is citing as a precedent was expressly authorized by the Congress, and that's what the Constitution requires. Money shall be spent from the public treasury that has been appropriated by Congress. And so if Congress doesn't approve the spending, you don't have it. It's just like the 10th Amendment. If the Constitution didn't give you the power to do something, you don't have it. And it doesn't change because you write yourself an executive order claiming an emergency. Well, John Stewart loses it, as the headline goes. He went on to an angry rant. And I got to say, I'm laughing about this, but we should all be really angry at this kind of corruption. And look, I disagree with John Stewart on most issues. We would disagree. We would disagree on moral issues. We would disagree on financial issues. But this is such a moral outrage. This is such obvious criminality and corruption that I agree with him on this. He said everything they're doing is an FU troll. And that's exactly what they're doing. They're doing it in our face to troll us. So the agreement for Trump to drop a $10 billion lawsuit against the IRS, again, as I point out, no other billionaire has sued. And let's not make this about January the 6th. This is not about January the 6th. This is about you embarrassed me by releasing my income tax returns. And a lot of these billionaires were presumably embarrassed. I don't know just how embarrassed Trump could be about anything. Is he ashamed of his adulteries? Is he ashamed about his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein? That at least he's trying to keep secret. But most of the things he's done, he boasts about them, even if they are criminal, even if they are impeachable offenses. And so he said, they're trolling us. His entire career is a troll. And he is doing that to Christians again when he plays the gay national anthem. He is really trolling them. And he's trolled the farmers. Oh, I love our farmers. They're such wonderful people. He does a tariff knowing full well that China is going to respond against the soybean farmers and other grain farmers and things like that. And he does nothing at all about it for at least 6 months, if he's done anything at this point in time. I haven't seen anything. But maybe he's done it and just hasn't been reported. But when he did that, at the same time that the farmers get cut off the legs, he and Bessent give $20 billion to Argentina. And Argentina turns around to our pal, Javier Milei. He turns around and he sells soybeans to China that they would have bought from the U.S. And Trump says, yeah, I'll give $12 billion to American farmers. And he doesn't do it for at least 6 months, as I said. But the $20 billion for Javier Milei, that was just coming straight from America. Then they were going to put together a deal for another $20 billion. What is it? Is it because they're both brothers and the Chabad Lubavitch? Because that's really what they're both into. But again, the Trump administration, as John Stewart said, is a smash and grab on the American public, on the taxpayer. And I think that's the way we ought to view this. I mean, Trump is just a criminal thug. He'll do anything for money. He said it's the most corrupt, just utterly unsheathed, unleashed on us, and they're grabbing whatever they can and pretending that it's remuneration, compensation for having been attacked. No, it's not. As a matter of fact, Tom Tillis, the Republican senator from North Carolina, said he vehemently disagrees with Trump's $1.8 billion fund. He calls it stupid on stilts. Now, I don't know what that, I've never seen that expression. Ever seen that, Lance? Stupid on stilts?
Nope.
I guess that's highly stupid. Where do we find the words to describe this? I mean, that really is it. You know, John Stewart goes on a tirade with the F word. You got Tom Tillis says stupid on stilts. It is beyond the point of absurdity what he's doing. The fact that the president is now in the role of both plaintiff and defendant, it is a sham. And of course, when everything gets dumped on the American taxpayer, and then we get higher prices for everything as well because of the failures of the Trump administration. Groceries just had the biggest price hike in years, and it's about to get even worse foreign experts. This is from The Hill. And I guess Trump's response to this will be, let them eat peanuts, right? As they point out, fruits and vegetables have seen some of the biggest price hikes. Tomatoes are 40% more expensive now than they were last year. He said it's because of tariffs, of course, and rising fuel prices. Coffee, another imported product, is 19% more expensive than it was last spring. Why are we putting tariffs on something that we don't grow or make here, right? I mean, he puts tariffs on bananas. He puts tariffs on coffee. There's no way that we're going to have coffee or bananas grown here. He's just making it more expensive for Americans. This is Trump's overreaching Leviathan. And the bullheaded nonsense that he's pulling. Diesel, for example, is powering everything, whether it's fishing boats catching fish, whether it's tractors that are planting crops, or whether it's the trucks that ship 83% of U.S. agricultural products. You're paying more at the pump, and so are the truckers who are transporting this around the country. Yeah, once you start putting all these peanuts together, it starts to add up. You know, and so Tucker Carlson comes out with a statement. He says what Trump has done is he's diminished American power in unimaginable ways. And I've talked about this because I can imagine it. I can see it happening. I can see where this is going. It isn't unimaginable to me. I don't have to imagine. I can see where this is going. And of course, I've talked about this before as well, militarily and financially. When you look at what both Biden and Trump have done, Trump has done both of these. Biden did it to us in terms of financial, but they are eroding American power, if you care about that sort of thing. I don't care about it, but I do care about the erosion of American purchasing power, which is happening because of the wars and happening because they are undermining this financial system, which basically has been an incredible gift. And we have been blessed with that. I think now we're in the path of being cursed. I think that's what Trump is about. Yeah, he is not taking him by his hand, except to bring him in as judgment and curse to America. Karl Rove warns that this Trump is so dangerously unpopular that it is tanking the GOP's midterm chances. Imagine that. Yeah, I think that, as I've said many times, I think he is going to be a Jimmy Carter millstone around the Republican Party, and rightfully so. These people have enabled him. These GOP sycophants have enabled him. So I think it's good to replace them. If you're going to have some Republicans, not these Republicans, not the ones, the spineless ones, who did whatever he wanted. And so, again, he said the redistricting efforts don't put the GOP majority in safe territory. However, we had a comment yesterday from Mama C 1996, which I didn't get to before the program ended. And I think Mama C had it. She said, Trump and Israel have now mastered voter fraud and are going to unleash on the midterms. Kentucky was just a practice run. I think that's probably it. You know, certainly the gerrymandering stuff, we don't want to further go down this. See, this is the issue. You know, when they look at things like this and say, hey, we can rig the elections better than the other guy. How about instead of finding ways that you can rig the election better than the other guys, how about finding safeguards to keep the election from being rigged? Oh, you don't like that, do you? This is the essence of both of these parties. They will never do the right thing. They'll look at somebody doing election rigging and they'll say, hey, how can we do that better than them? And that's really the reality of where we are with these people. As they point out, critics are concerned that this money could go to January the 6th felons. And as I said before, don't go for that. This is something that his critics, whether they're Republican or Democrat, mainstream media, that are criticizing him for this, it is not about that. It's about him not ever having the IRS come after him, removing all the penalties for these audits, giving him complete immunity for all the tax cheating that he's done. And he's not ashamed of that Why would he be ashamed of his tax returns being put out if he is not ashamed of what he is doing with Todd Blanche? It's really about his tax returns, and it's about his theft. Don't make it about the J6 people. They have been the scapegoats for enough of this stuff, in my opinion. Well, before we take a break here, before we go to our interviews here, I wanted to tell you about one of our sponsors, Homestead Products. They've got a sale right now on organic molasses, and they have some of the best organic products. You really should go to homesteadproducts.shop. And so again, the organic molasses, the strongest flavor, the most nutritious, made purely of sugarcane molasses. It is unsulfured, no preservatives added. It's great for making cookies, baked beans, and robust sauces. Many folks value it for its healthy nutrients because it's high in potassium, calcium, and iron. And you can get that right now at homesteadproducts.shop. You can get it while it's on sale. And I want to thank our other sponsors, and those are the people who just support us with donations. I haven't run through the list of people from Cash App and Zelle for a while, so let me do that real quickly. Won't take very long. There's not that many supporters out there, but the ones who have done it have been very kind, very generous. Clifford, thank you very much. Robert A., and that's on Cash App, and like I said, it wouldn't take too long, but on Zelle, the list is a little bit longer. William Daniel W., Michael M., Michael L., Ramon G., John S., Lyndon H., Christopher S., thank you very much, and Mary Ellen M., Julie W., Susan L., Kenneth C., Jonathan M., Susan L. again, Ramon G. again. That's why I say we have not that many different supporters, but we have very faithful supporters who have sustained this program, and you should all thank them. I'm not going to read the last names unless I do it by accident here. Adam D., Susan L. again, Rose G., Kimberly M., Michael P., Benjamin R., Ramon again, Ramon G., and Gregory I., Josephine C., Susan L. again, Beverly S., Grandin M., and Daniel C. Thank you so much, all of you. And we do have a letter here, actually, from Susan. And I wanted to read this to you because I thought it was interesting. She said, I was raised in a church to also believe that if we did not support Israel and the Jewish people, that God would condemn our country. How manipulative and false that was, and how destructive to my faith. It is such an awesome blessing over the years how God has opened my eyes as I've been drawn closer to Him. And see, that's the issue. Be very careful of, you know, our hearts are idol factories, as it's been said many times. And there's always things that are being put in the way, whether it is, and it could be a harmless thing, you know, it could be something that there is inherently no harm in it, except for the excessiveness of it. And so it can be work, it can be family, it can be any type of thing can become an idol. And of course, we can all are always offered things to follow, whether it's theology or getting involved in an institution. All of these things can be obstacles to us having a relationship with Christ. And that, I think, is the key issue with the dispensationalism. It is an issue of substituting something different and doing it essentially on steroids. And what is it that is being offered to us? Well, it is a geopolitical issue. It is politics. It's some of the stuff that I have said in terms of looking at politics here in our country, but this is even foreign politics. And what is strange about Zionism is that it mixes some theology along with this tendency towards worshiping political figures or worshiping a political entity, because we see that as a way that we can get something that we want. Here it is presented as something that is holy and altruistic, and that is the real perversion of it. And so she pointed out, she said, getting away from that has gotten her closer to God because it is something that is put between you and God, right? And she said, the anger that wells up in me now to think about our country, our people, our faith, being uprooted and destroyed makes me sick. Literally. And so she said she read the article from Brian Shalhavi. And, of course, he has done quite a few articles about this. She asked if I would recommend a book. I would also recommend Substack from J.D. Hall. He's talked quite a bit about this. I went into an article they did, but he has a much more detailed explanation of it. If you got any questions about are the Ashkenazi, you know, you've heard Joel Salenti. No, they're not Jews. They're Nazis. Well, that, it's a little bit different than that. That's kind of a superficial look at that. No, but the reality is when you go back and you look at what the anthropologists and the archaeologists have said, and you go back to the Bible, the Table of Nations in Genesis 10, the issue is that they say that they are called Ashkenazi because they were Jews who moved to that area and became identified with that area that was already named that way. He makes a case, and he points out many Jewish scholars who have studied the ethnicity of this have disputed that as well. And so there's some interesting articles from J.D. Hall about that and other subjects. I would also recommend, it's not a small book necessarily, but it's a book called High King of Heaven. It's by Dean Davies. You can find that. Again, what he does is he focuses on the Old Testament kingdom prophecies. And this is the thing that gets confused, I believe, by the dispensationalist. If you pull back and if you look at this, if your interpretation of prophecies are going to cause you to worship something or some entity or some especially foreign political entity more so than Christ, I think you've got it wrong. Just pull it back and look at that and say, where is my attention being directed? And I would say that even about end time prophecies. I've seen so many churches that get caught up in the end of the world, and it looks to me like they're playing Ouija board politics. You know, they're doing divination rather than trying to have a stronger relationship with Christ, trying to know Christ better, what his priorities are. There was an interesting tweet, as a matter of fact, as well, and this is from a Twitter account called Real Corolla to Hope. I think I retweeted it when I saw it on my Twitter account. And put this meme up, but and it shows Jesus there, and he's got a woman on each side, right? He's got a bride on one side, and he's got Israel on the other side. And Carolina said, dispensationalism is a blasphemous theology. Why? Well, because at its core, it gives Christ two wives, they point out. And it says, first of all, the church is a wife who recognizes him, loves him, gives herself to him completely. But the second wife, 1948 Israel, is secular, Christ-rejecting, committing spiritual adultery by refusing the Messiah. And here's the twist, according to this theology. God prefers the unfaithful one. She gets impunity, wealth, power, license to do whatever she wants, including killing Christians. So where does that leave the church? Well, with second wife status. While Israel 1948, the one that denies Christ, gets the ring, the inheritance, the unconditional political and theological devotion, no accountability, no conditions, nothing asked in return. So again, this has nothing to do with real Christianity. It is just geopolitical ideology. And that's the issue. You know, I avoided talking about this for the longest time, but dispensationalism has been weaponized by the state of Israel. It is a false theology, I think. But and like everything that we do, if we get our theology wrong, we get things in our life wrong, they have consequences. It's not something that is going to necessarily condemn us to hell because there is forgiveness in Christ. And nobody is going to live a perfect life, and nobody's going to have perfect theology. However, the consequences of getting these things wrong, they do have consequences. Just take a look at King David, for example, right? He was forgiven by God for what? For adultery, for murder. He was forgiven. But there were consequences throughout his entire life, weren't there? The sword never departed from his own family. So there were political intrigues, civil war, all the rest of this from his own children. And we have to worry about the consequences in this life as well as a loss of rewards in the next life, our relationship with Christ is one that is built on faith. It's not on our earning anything, but there's nevertheless consequences for that. Now, when you look at this and you think about wives, and of course, Huckabee likes to talk about, you know, Israel is my wife type of thing. And in a sense, he's not saying it spiritually. He's saying it more like, you know, his country. You know, don't come to my house and say, I love to hang out with you, but I don't like your wife. But he has said essentially the same thing. He has said that the basis of Christianity, the foundation of Christianity, is the Jewish people. No, it's not. That's a good example of replacing Christ, who is the foundation of our faith, replacing Christ with an ethnic group, replacing Christ with a geopolitical entity. And that truly is idolatry. So does Christ have two wives? Did he have one that he got rid of and divorced or before he had the church? No. In reality, that's what Paul was talking about. Paul was saying that all of Israel was never Israel. So there's an ethnic group called Israel, and he made a distinction between that group and the people within that ethnic and political group that was called Israel. Within that, there was a true Israel, which was by faith. And what he points out is that this has enlarged to the extent that now this has been opened up to every ethnic group. God is not a respecter of persons. And so every ethnic group has access to God through faith. That was the true Israel in the Old Testament. It's the true Israel in the New Testament and today as well. It's very important for us to get that right because we're getting drawn into some horrific things that God will judge this country for, and we don't want to be drawn into that. So we're going to take a quick break, folks, and we'll be right back with these interviews. We've got Monty Fritz, and then we have Clyde Lewis. Stay tuned. I think you'll really enjoy these interviews.
The David Knight Show.
Elvis.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
And the sweet sounds of Motown. Find them on the Oldies channel at APSradio.com.
Joining us now is Monty Fritz, and he is running for governor here in Tennessee. This is a race I think is going to get a lot of national attention because Marsha Blackburn is running also for governor. It's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, Mr. Fritz, was because I've seen some of the things that Marsha Blackburn has proposed lately, and I'm very concerned about them in terms of AI and in terms of crypto, some things like that. Of course, she got a lot of national attention when she asked Ketanji Brown Jackson, what is a woman? That resonated everywhere. Which is a good question. I've got to ask, though, what is the purpose of artificial intelligence of all the crypto bills that she has put through? And I'm very concerned about one of them in particular because the Trump America AI Act basically is, in my opinion, anti-10th Amendment. I want to get your take on that as well. So thank you for joining us.
Yes, sir. It's an honor to be with you today. I appreciate you taking the time.
Well, thank you. And just to give people a background, you are an elected Tennessee state representative. Is that correct?
I represent House District 32, which is Roane County and the north half of Loudoun County. I've been doing that for 4 years. Mm-hmm. I limited myself when I got into this. I think career politicians are the demise of our nation. And
I agree. Yes.
I refuse to be one of those. And
well,
I think honorable people, term limit themselves, was happy to get out of politics. I don't like being around most politicians. I find most of them to be weak males or feckless females. I don't know how to say this other than I'm going to turn the ringer off my phone. It's going to harass us.
Okay.
I feel a burden from God to run.
Mm-hmm. Good.
That wigs some people out when I say that. I don't care. I say this with a smile. I sound gruff. I don't mean to sound gruff.
It doesn't freak out me. It doesn't freak out my audience. They're used to hearing that a lot. So
I think someone would do this to themselves and to their family and subject themselves to the required travel, the criticism, time away from family, and didn't do the mind of God to do it, might not be the sharpest knife in the drawer.
Yeah, that's right. Well, let me ask you this. You term limited yourself. What did you do before you got into politics as a state representative?
Yeah, I was retired at the time. I had spent most of my work career in nuclear manufacturing. I had enriched uranium operations at the Y-12 plant for a number of years. Started as an hourly employee, grew up through that. God put good people in my pathway that mentored me along. I was a director of operations at Nuclear Fuels up in Irwin, making fuel for the Navy for a period of time. And then the last couple of years I'd spent at Y-12, I was a production liaison for National Nuclear Security Administration. And when Trump 45 was elected, I was offered a non-competitive appointment with the federal government. I did that for the most of the 4 years Trump was in office. And had the material recovery and recycle programs and set up the Office of Stockpile Production Integration for the government.
Okay, so you're in charge of the nuclear dust, as they would say, right?
Well,
maybe you could explain to us what nuclear dust that they're trying to get at is. But let me ask you first, before we get into some of the other priorities, and maybe it's a priority of yours or not, certainly is a priority of mine. When I look at what is involved in things like the Trump America AI Act, we see over and over again the idea that we're going to protect children, but it always seems to, which we all agree, right? That's nobody would disagree with that. And yet they seem to take it in a direction always that takes us to digital ID, to lack of anonymity, to knowing and tracking everything that everybody does, taking us to a surveillance state. That's my real concern about it. But then there's also some other issues when I look at this this bill. This is going to create one set of rules for the entire country. And we've seen this before as well from Monsanto with glyphosate and other things like that. When they were facing opposition in local areas, they said, we can't handle a patchwork quilt of regulations. So we need to have one set of rules to rule us all, right? And you wind up when you go to Washington, and when it's driven by the industry, you wind up with one set of rules, which are no rules at all. They get to do whatever they wish. And so as we look at the rollout of AI, and I think this is something that's going to be a big state issue, because the immediate issue is going to be resource use, power requirements, water requirements. But beyond that, the even more important issues are going to be surveillance and identification, digital ID. What is your take on that? How do you feel about that?
I think some of these federal bureaucrats and elected people who just do what they're told by the people who have given them money, and I think that's a large part of what you see happening here, but they often use phrases like gun violence and protecting the children in our schools to disarm the public,
yeah,
take away the creator endowed right to keep and bear arms. Shall not be infringed is clear, and we have found ourselves going down that path for some time. That's a battle we've had here in Tennessee. The weak males in state government don't want to stand up for your right to keep and bear arms. the 10th Amendment is very clear. I'm not sure that the federal government has the constitutional authority in their 18 enumerated powers to be able to control all things AI. I think AI data centers are going to be detrimental in everything from the cost of our electricity, because they're going to be huge consumers of electricity. We're already in not a great place there, thanks to the feckless behavior of the government in the Tennessee Valley. We have the Tennessee Valley Authority. Love them overall, but they have not planned well to keep generating capacity up. And Congress, in their role as oversight, has failed to execute that. So about 1 out of 4 kilowatts we use in the state of Tennessee come from outside the state of Tennessee. We buy some from Duke Power, we buy some from Southern Power. So that's problem number one. Is the increased competition for those kilowatts is going to, I think, impact our residential and commercial rates in Tennessee.
Oh, yeah. Now, yeah.
Past that, you start to get into our water systems and our resources. And other than what everyone knows about, you know, water for cooling and, you know, what we intake and what we discharge and what's the delta between the two, what is AI going to do to that water is all a question. But noise pollution, frequency pollution in whatever electromagnetic field or whatever field is maintained in these large data centers, I think can be problematic. I think that that capacity to store data from everything we say, do, and purchase is a great problem.
Oh, yeah.
And so we just allowed our nation to be invaded by foreign cultures who hate our Constitution and hate our God. And we saw an illegitimate Joe Biden encourage that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And probably some on the Republican side were in on that too, but definitely a Democrat thing. And now we're being invaded by globalist and World Economic Forum people who want to control us through the manipulation of our data.
That's right.
And they want, if they can, they want to meet with politicians and they want to solicit the taxpayers' investment in their infrastructure so that they come in fully on profit. When you look at simple things like production of jobs, the mere definition of artificial intelligence is deleterious to the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have net negative job production by these. Sure, there's going to be assemblies and assembly and construction, but then an overall net negative job production. And they're going to want to take our money to do that. Our Tennessee Department of Economic and Community Development has been far too liberal with corporate welfare. I'm a believer of no corporate welfare. There's nothing in our Tennessee Constitution that allows the state government to take tax dollars and incentivize business to come here by giving them your cash if you're a Tennessean.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what.
They're going to get a lot of subsidy to put those AI data centers here as well.
That's what they want to do, and that's still tax dollars.
Yeah,
I mean, even if it's not a direct check that goes to them, if it's a subsidized payment in lieu of taxes or something like that, it shifts the burden back onto the taxpayer. So they want the citizens of Tennessee and other states, but I'm concerned about Tennessee. They want the citizens of Tennessee to fund their infrastructure investment so that they can make lots of money and track us to infinite detail. I'm opposed to that.
I agree.
We should not spend one red cent of Tennessee dollars bringing those businesses in. And as a matter of fact, I think we do have the constitutional right to oppose that infrastructure. Quality of life in Tennessee and our primary industry of agriculture stands to suffer greatly from this.
Mm-hmm.
And because I understand there's a facility being built in Arizona that is not in square foot measured in square foot size, but in square miles.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's larger than Manhattan, and it's going to use more power, I think, than the state is currently using. So it is a massive impact. And people are looking at some of those things. They're not looking at the civil liberties issues or the privacy issues or the surveillance issues. I think it's very telling to see all these bills being introduced. And, of course, Marsha Blackburn has been part of the, Genius Crypto Act that she got involved in, as well as the Genesis AI Act. And now she's done another one, the Trump America AI Act. when you look at all these, there's no consciousness at all about the human rights of individuals. No protection about that. Nothing about due process or privacy or surveillance. As a matter of fact, everything is targeted towards taking those things away.
Well, brother, it's all the D.C. politicians. It's not just Senator Blackburn. We see Google and the Bill Gates of the world and the Oracles of the world that want to take our money and take data and use it against us. Mm-hmm. Tech companies often farm our jobs out to what I would call press one for English entities. Mm-hmm. And they have little regard for us. We have congressmen who are voting to hide the information about misbehavior of their fellow congressmen toward, I guess, the young people that work in our U.S. Capitol. Mm-hmm. And those elitist mentalities of I can take money from the crypto people and then, you know, carry their water for them. That's become the standard politician of today. And we're in a sad place. A few years ago, I did a resolution calling Tennessee into a month of fasting and prayer, seeking God's healing hand. And I did that after I sat down and wrote a list of grievances about some of the things in our state, 9,000 children at that time in state's custody, violent homes and drugs and drunkenness and politicians and celebrities. And it became evident to me after about a year of being in politics, as I'd not been it before, that we need a move of God in Tennessee. That if there is not a repentance on behalf of God's people, turning to Him and turning away from some of these sinful debaucheries that we allow to take place. And I'm not talking about just Epstein lists. I'm talking about taking grocery sales tax off the people of Tennessee and then building the Tennessee Titans a new stadium.
Yes, I know.
That is an immoral thing.
That's right.
And it's unconstitutional. It's immoral. And we need to call that out. It's not popular to call those kinds of things out. They get a little bit raw. I do that.
Yeah, but that's been a pet peeve of mine for a very long time, all the money subsidizing these stadiums for billionaires so they can pay millionaires to play a kid's game. But, if people like that, let them pay for it.
It's the same thing for the data centers now.
Yeah, it's going to be much worse for the data centers. At least the football players aren't following us around and looking at everything that we're doing. You know, they kind of leave you alone, but we're not going to be left alone by the AI data center. So that brings us back to some of the other issues that people have talked about in different states. Let me get your opinion on nullification. How do you see that in Tennessee?
I think that starts with no. I think that comes with an exercise of what I think are absolute rights in our Bill of Rights, including that 10th Amendment. The states created the federal government. And so often I'll hear from one of these bought and paid politicians that, well, we can't do anything about that because that's a federal law. And they completely, in my opinion, misinterpret what they refer to as the Supremacy Clause, because it's with that clause in our Constitution is referring to what's in the Constitution, not that just because someone says it, it is fiat law throughout the land.
Yeah, I agree.
And we have gotten so far outside those 18 enumerated powers, we must say no. So we've had a great state rep he's been doing this for much longer than me. I've been in 4 years. He's been 10. This is his last year, I think. And he's been pushing for the nullification, even to introduce a process. I don't have any opposition to the process that Representative Halsey has pushed for. I think it's a healthy thing. Mm-hmm. But I think it also starts with the backbone to say, no, we're not going to do that. That's our money that you've taken to the IRS. We're promised that we're going to get rid of the Department of Education and the U.S. Department of Education, something that Carter did. And I'm all for that. But let's completely get rid of it. Let's remove Linda McMahon and let's go ahead and stop taking those IRS dollars proportionately into what's going into education. Leave those dollars in the states. Let us spend them.
That's right.
And oftentimes I'll hear this and I'll stop the long answer. I will hear from my colleagues here in Nashville. Well, we can't do that. We won't get the federal money. I'll tell you, brother, there's a that first, the federal government has no money. That's ours.
They printed it.
And second, if we come down to a constitution of our, or not a constitution, come down to a question of our constitution and our creator endowed rights and dollars, that should be an easy decision that we, that men of conscience would stand up and say, no, we're going to follow the constitution. We're going to oppose this ridiculous rule. We have found ourselves, I think, brother, at a point, again, there's a great need for repentance in our nation. I heard a young lady speak recently, and she was applauding President Trump for standing up against, you know, males in female sports. And I support that as well. But isn't it a shame that we live in a nation that we have to depend on a politician to do that?
That's right.
There is no acceptance by any father, grandfather, uncle, brother, cousin, whatever, that should allow a man to disrobe next to a female. It's not a man, it's a male. Mm-hmm. Maybe even steer, not a bull, but allow them to disrobe next to a female and no consequences for that.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't mean to be ugly, but we've hit such a point of weakness in America that we're always looking for somebody to rescue us.
Yes.
And I think God's calling us to stand up and be men.
That's right. And look to him for rescue as well. Yeah. And for guidance, not to politicians. I absolutely agree with you on that. And you know, getting back to the money issue and the 10th Amendment issue, doesn't it begin? And I think Bud Halsey was part of this saying, yeah, we're not going to take the government's money when it comes to education, because if they fund it, they're going to control it. They use that money to bribe and to blackmail. Once you get used to taking that money, then the blackmail kicks in, because it's like, if you don't do what I say now, I'll take that money away from you. So I think it really kind of begins with the political will to stand up against taking the money, doesn't it?
It does. There's an old maxim or proverb, and I don't know who to credit for it, but overtaxation is the first and most effective form of bondage. Mm-hmm. We see that in Nehemiah chapter 5 mm-hmm. all the way into today. As a matter of fact, one might argue we're taxed more heavily today than the people in Nehemiah chapter 5 were.
Oh, I think they said, much more, yeah.
Where they said to Nehemiah, we've had to sell our children off into bondage to pay the king's tax. And Nehemiah says to them, I became angry and I contended with the nobles. Two or three things there. One is, in America, there are no nobles. The only king is Jesus. Mm-hmm. We have presidents, we have office holders, but we the people are the authority. We grant that authority. When we allow government to take more money from our pockets than what they should, that becomes the fuel for their tyranny. Mm-hmm. We must stop that. And it happens in the state. It's not just a federal thing. It's out of control federally. In Tennessee, the average Tennessean pays $4,500 to $4,700 a year in state and local taxes and $15,700 a year in federal taxes, IRS taxes. So you've got to work out $20,000 of salary, and that's about a $50,000 average salary, before you start keeping any money, before you hit a break even. Yes. That means we're working into May. Mm-hmm. That's unacceptable. Yeah. And it fuels these machines of bureaucracy where they become redistributors of our wealth. Our founders never intended that.
That's right.
Things like roads are important. Everybody benefits from them. Public education is important. Our Tennessee Constitution, Article 11, Section 12, says we recognize the inherent value of education. Our founders recognize that. You and I recognize that. But if we allow ourselves to spend on everything, including that corporate welfare of new stadiums and new AI data centers, there's no end to it, because government has an insatiable appetite for your dollars and for my dollars.
That's right.
We must put them on a diet.
That's right. Absolutely right. And when we're talking about the amount of money that is being spent, you've spoken to the fact that the expenditures here in Tennessee have been growing at a very fast rate, faster, you say, than the federal government has. Talk about that a little bit. What has happened?
Yes, sir. In 2019, Governor Haslam's last budget request was $37.5 billion. Last year, for 25-26, the budget we're currently operating under, there was the request from Governor Lee was $59.5 billion. A $59.8 billion budget passed. I voted against that budget. It had corporate welfare in it. It was a decreased Tennessee veteran spending. I could not support it. But that's a 59% growth in 6 years. This year, the budget request from the governor is $58.3 billion, down $1.5 million from the request for last year. But the continued collection of revenue in the state in the projection summary that comes out with our budget said it was down from $64.1 billion. So that meant that the projection in early March was we were going to collect about $64 billion. So that outpaces the growth of our national debt that wow. Senator Sherman's had a part in growing for the past 25 years. You know, shame on these senators who won't vote, whether you like Rand Paul or not, cap the doggone budget.
Yeah.
Cap
yeah.
the deficit. We have to do that. The reason there's such an uprising to do this whole Article 5 thing amongst lots of people is because these politicians are many, not all, but many are enriching themselves because they're laundering our money through not only the halls of Congress, but through foreign nations and getting it kicked back to them.
Yes. Yes.
I'll say it. The folks that you look at in Congress, whether it's McConnell or Pelosi, these aren't the geniuses that were just brilliant in how they traded. And you struggle to stop that.
Yeah.
But we struggled to stop sending millions of dollars weekly to the Taliban. And I have homeless veterans living under bridges across the state of Tennessee. And it is not our constitutional responsibility to build them new houses and provide for them everything, but we can't care for them.
Yeah.
We can't help them recover from the state of homelessness. But I have a hard time getting money to do that from the state or the federal government in my state, yet we send money to these other places.
It's amazing again, sense of priorities, isn't it?
Budget must be the first priority. Let me just give you this in the budget this year. I voted against the budget again this year because I think, again, that we're going to continue to collect to $64.1 million is a problem. That means we're going to continue to spend, and the legislature only voted at 59.8. But gasoline costs in the state of Tennessee in July of last year, were 10 months ago, were $2.72 per gallon on average. This year, this week, they're $4.17 per gallon. Mm-hmm. That's like a 53% increase. So there's a letter going to my speaker and all my colleagues and to the governor and to the lieutenant governor. It may have already gone out, asking us to come back into special session if necessary to suspend the 26 cents gasoline, 27 cents diesel, and the 4 cents grocery sales tax, because we have neighbors in Tennessee that are financially upside down much more so now than what they were even a year ago.
Yes.
And if we've collected to meet that budget, then let's stop collecting from the people for a moment of time. We'll see how that goes. This year's budget had $20 million for a nonprofit Nashville Zoo, $5 million for a nonprofit Knoxville Zoo. I love the orangutans and I love the elephant. It is not your responsibility as a taxpayer to pay for a nonprofit. Let your ticket price for admission into the zoo make that payment.
That's right.
Let private investors put equity into those nonprofits and not force it from the taxpayer, because every dollar that was taken of those $25 million for zoos in this year's budget was in essence taken at gunpoint.
Yes.
Because if you don't pay your taxes, you lose your property.
That's right. And when we talk about things that are basic that people are looking at, like roads, for example, I think Bill Lee started getting into this toll road path that he started following down, arguing that we can't afford to build the roads, we can't afford to repair the roads, because we've got different priorities, don't we? And so we're going to have to put tolls on that. Now, I moved here 3 years ago, 4 years ago now, and one of the things I liked about Tennessee was that it was one of 14 states that didn't have toll roads. And then Bill Lee started putting them on. What is your position on that? Do you think we can pay for the toll roads if we don't pay for the zoos?
So I voted for the Transportation Modernization Act because wording in it and at the presentation of the bill was that was not going to be first tolled, because a toll road means that you have to get from point A to point B. You have to pay that cost to get there. Florida uses those to cross rivers and canals and all that kind of stuff, use them a lot up north. I would not be in favor of a toll road. If within the current boundaries of state property, which was the way this was marketed, and there was not going to be a further exercise of eminent domain, because that's out of control in my state, that we can have investment and you can pay a nickel per mile or whatever it is to go faster, I don't have any big objection to that. But I will tell you, in that same bill, we, you know, that 26 and 27 cents per gallon is what is supposed to take care of the roads. Now, when we have road projects that are 40 years old and 25 years old in the state of Tennessee, we're not managing projects. We're creating jobs programs. And that is not the focus of TDOT. We need to recalibrate that. Tell me how you measure me and I'll tell you what I am. And right now our measurements in performance of road projects is broken. We're getting an F when you've got 40-year-old road projects in Tennessee. But that bill also put about $100 per year on electric vehicles like Teslas, all electric, plug-in electric vehicles, so that they're contributing to the roads. Like when, if you drive an internal combustion vehicle, you get that at 26 cents per gallon, actually 27.4, but 26 cents per gallon gas tax. We put that on non-plug-in hybrids. And so I ran a bill this year to pull that part off. And I tried to explain to my colleagues that It is the purchase of gasoline in a Toyota RAV4 or Camry or Honda CRV that produces the electricity and charges the batteries in those non-plug-in hybrids that they cannot be plugged in. And the city chair basically said this, well, we talked to TDOT and they need the money worse than you do.
Yeah, yeah. That's the attitude that we see over and over again.
Mentality is broken on other people's money, brother. Mm. We need to recalibrate that in Tennessee.
You know, we look at budgets and the escalating budget here in Tennessee. We look at the escalating deficit, and before the election, we'll be over $40 trillion in debt at the federal level. And so, you know, people that I have been talking to here in Tennessee, Senator Frank Nicely, former senator, who passed away last year, he was working very hard in terms of gold and silver and making that legal tender here. What do you think about that? And what would you do as governor to make that happen?
I think I'm fully supportive of it. Representative Holsey carried that same type of legislation. Mm-hmm. We actually got a portion of that passed through the House this year. It didn't make it through the Senate. I think that there should be an option for that. I think that many of these globalists are pushing, and I'm not trying to be offensive if you're into the crypto markets, but I don't, not only do I not understand it, I don't trust it.
I don't either. I think it's a pump and dump. Personally, that's my take on it. But I'm very concerned about it, especially when we look at, you know, we fought against CBDC and we raised people's understanding of the dangers of a digital currency. But the reality is that if we come in with this stable coin that's being pushed now, it has all the dangers of a digital currency in terms of surveillance, in terms of being able to stop you from being able to make a transaction if they don't like you for some reason or the other. The only difference is that instead of it being run by a central bank, it's being run by some friends of the politicians. And so I'm very concerned about that as well. And at the state level, once this all started kicking off, we saw some states where they were trying to change the UCC code to make CBDC acceptable form of payment. And that got stopped in some states, like in Florida. They pushed back against that directly and said, no, we will not allow CBDC as a to be accepted as UCC code. Nevertheless, it seems to me like they have done essentially a relabeling, a head fake to push forward the stable coins. What do you think about that? What's your position?
Yeah, I think that I use a card far too much, a debit card far too much. Because it is convenient and we have relied upon that convenience and it's put us in a place where we've become accustomed to that. When you have cash in your pocket or you write a check, you see your expenditures and no one really sees it ahead of time or even instantaneously as to what's taking place in the transaction. Everything that we do that has any electronic basis to it puts us subject to greater control by these tyrants. They have determined around the world and the tyrants here in the United States how they can enrich themselves and usurp control over us. It's much like that committee chairman that said, we need your $100 more than you need it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That same mentality on your liberty. That same thing that you opened up with when you said, you know, we talk about we've got to save the children, so we've got to put regulations in. And that's a seductive slope, right? It is. Mm-hmm. And I mean in a good way, not in a bad way, because we all want to do the right thing by our children. But oftentimes we find ourselves getting down, lured into that path because we are trying to prevent a crime before it takes place. Mm-hmm. Really think under our Constitution and under God's economy of justice, you discourage the crime or the sin by fear of the consequences after you commit it. And we've gotten shallow on consequences for sin and crime. And we have gotten deep on trying to be a nanny state that protects one another from the latest virus by asking us to take a shot or a jab or the latest armed thug by, if you'll leave your firearms at home, maybe they'll leave theirs at home.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, once we go down that path of pre-crime, and as you point out correctly, we don't actually punish crime after the fact, and yet we really focus on pre-crime. It sounds like that's going to be a smart thing, but we know how in practice that operates. And so when we look at the crime of indentured servitude, which is what we're talking about here with the taxes and the deficit budgets, one of the things coming down the road, I think, in all these states, I think we're getting ready with the oil situation that's happened with the Iran war and the fundamental inflation that is being baked into everything, in addition to the policies of the Federal Reserve in terms of money printing and interest rates, we now have this other factor here. We've seen this movie before, and so there's going to be a massive amount of inflation, and I think what people are going to start to see is how that's going to be reflected in property taxes. Talk a little bit about property taxes. How do we protect people from losing their homes with property taxes? Because I've seen that used by developers when I was growing up in Florida to kick people out of their homes. They were going up on property taxes and miscellaneous fees like that exponentially, and using that to take people's homes for their big real estate projects. How do we control property taxes?
Most of what you and I've talked about today, not every single thing, but most of them, I've tried to carry a piece of legislation to control this. So this is one of them. This year, my approach was stop the taxation against unrealized capital gains on our property taxes. Mm-hmm. Because see, we do appraisals or reassessments or whatever every 4 to 5 years. And so if you are native here and you have owned your house for 20 years and you paid $250,000 for it, it's likely that that assessment's well over a $500,000 now. And it establishes a basis for taxation, even with our next year net neutral law in place in Tennessee, where your taxes can get out of control quickly. Mm-hmm. So we attempted two things with this bill. I'm so ashamed of my Republican colleagues because they wouldn't get on board with it. They wouldn't get on board because the lobbyist and probably the governor's office told them not to. And again, shame on them for not being strong men who can think for themselves. Mm-hmm. Because I can assure you that across the state, this was popular. So first, let's drive a stake in the ground. The bill that I carried was 2020. What the property was assessed at in 2020 or what you've paid for it since would be the value of the property. And it took that every 4 to 5 year assessment and thusly taxation against unrealized capital gains out of the equation. Secondly, if you were, and the way the bill was written, if you could prove residence in your home for 10 years, if you were delinquent in taxes, you couldn't be evicted. I'd like to see that 1 year, right?
Yes, yes.
We were trying to write something that we had a chance of getting passed. I couldn't even get that passed. And some sad. Of it was stung some of these people's feelings because I'm running for governor, and some because I've called them, some of them, weak males. But it's the truth. And it is unacceptable. The most vulnerable in our population, when we have idiots in D.C. who can't control the budget and we have seniors living on fixed incomes, this is not going to end well for their monthly draw if something isn't course corrected.
That's right.
Right. In D.C. And so those people are most at risk to be evicted by their county government and have their home sold on the courthouse steps. That's unacceptable.
Yes.
Intent. And yes. So we tried to do both those. As governor, my intent is to push that and to make these people feel so badly about how they're trying to step on their fellow citizens that we'll pass it.
I think that's a winning issue. You know, it is something that's going to get a lot of attention and it should be talked about, because when we look at the inflation that's being baked in, that's going to be reflected in home prices, as we've already seen. It's very difficult for people who are not in a home situation to be able to get into the home market. And yet the people who are in the homes, what they're going to be squeezed out with is going to be the escalation in property taxes as they reevaluate that on an annual basis. There was a guy I interviewed in Indiana who's running for governor as a third party candidate. And his name is Donald Rainwater. He had a good idea, Mr. Fritz. And of course, what he was talking about was he said, let's make it like a sales tax. So you hit a 7% tax when you buy the house, a 7% of the value. And you can either fold that into your 30-year mortgage and or you can pay it off 1% a year for 7 years and then you're done. And it doesn't happen again until you sell it again. So basically what he did was he would convert the property tax into a sales tax. But your proposal is good as well in terms of stopping the constant reevaluation of this and the unending annual tax, which is essentially an annual sales tax on the value of your home.
It is. And some of my colleagues, at least a couple of them, have talked to me about the proposal that you mentioned there from the fellow in Indiana. And I think there's probably several ways to do this. Mm-hmm. The approach that we offered to stay in alignment with our Tennessee Constitution and not require a constitutional amendment, what I was offering would have done that. Mm-hmm. And I think that for those of us who are native here, we're suffering from the fact that Tennessee is a great place to live, relatively low cost of living relative to the other states. But even the blue state refugees who come here, if we don't correct the property tax the way we're doing it now, the mere fact that they're coming here and our values are escalating, they're going to find them and themselves in the same conditions that they left.
That's right. That's right.
And so really my new Tennessee, California, Wisconsin, and New York neighbors love this idea.
Yeah. In Florida, we would see that a lot. We would see people who were trying to escape the high taxes of New York or Michigan or whatever. And then they'd be very susceptible to, okay, yeah, you need to raise taxes for whatever this reason. I'll go along with that. They're still pretty low. And before you know it, you're back to where they came from. But let's talk about some of the other bills that you've introduced. You were involved with the what we call chemtrails. Of course, geoengineering is really what it is. Talk a little bit about that. That got a lot of attention.
So that's one of the probably four or five areas that I got an opportunity to lead the nation in carrying legislation. And it is geoengineering. It's written to prohibit geoengineering specifically because I wanted to include everything from cloud seeding and stratospheric aerosol injection to carbon capture. All schemes to usurp some authority over us, either financially or legislatively or both.
Yes.
And so we were able to get that passed. We had a young man come and testify against the bill in 24. And he was in favor of the stratospheric aerosol injection and carbon capture and all that. But he didn't want us to touch the cloud seeding because that's his business. He actually got the bill passed because his testimony in front of the committee validated all of what I was offering. None of the Democrats would vote for it that year, which is surprising because anything that we inject into the atmosphere, whether it's 15,000 or 30,000 feet, eventually you and I eat, breathe, or drink it or absorb it. And so I'm happy that we got that through. TDEC actually helped with that bill the first year. Governor Lee has reportedly said that we tried to carry a second bill that would have increased the authorities and delegated prosecutorial authority. And what I was told was that it was government overreach to try to stop geoengineering, basically, which ranks up there with one of the dumbest statements I've ever heard.
It's been around for a very long time, and I remember over a decade ago talking about it, and they would have annual conferences about it. At the same time, people were saying, oh, it's not happening, and they had annual conferences, and one of the papers that I covered, the guy said, well, we all agree that we have the ability to do this. The question is, who gets to set the thermostat? You know, do we want it warmer or cooler? You know, because you have this issue at home, typically, between different people. And so who gets to set the thermostat? It wasn't a question of if they were doing it or whether they could do it, but just who gets to decide what it's going to be.
Well, it gets into the same thing that we started our conversation with today on the AI data centers. Do we want wealthy globalists or big corporations to be able to determine who does and does not get rain based on who does and does not pay for the cloud seeding? Mm-hmm. Do we want to risk a globalist, a Bill Gates type, or one of these tech company owners to be able to harvest their word, quote unquote, a 10 to 11% more precipitation in a Western state and suffer 10 to 11% less precipitation downstream in that weather pattern? Do we want to risk that? Mm-hmm. It's the same concept of playing God as the AI is.
That's right.
So I think that God created you and I to be able to solve great and complex problems. Now, you may be a physicist and I may be a block layer, but we can solve great and complex problems together, right? And God has given us that ability. If we relinquish our cognitive ability to a machine or a system, to a structure, that is I think it is a first step toward the mark of the beast.
That's right.
And at least it's a large step toward the mark of the beast. And we cannot allow that to happen. It is a godless thought process. It is against the laws of nature and nature's God for us to, again, relinquish our cognitive ability to a structure or a system. That doesn't mean we can't use calculators or even supercomputing, brother. Mm-hmm. But when we get to self-generating thought in a machine that we're going to allow it to tell us what the answers are, where does that stop? Do we remove the judges from the benches, and do we just speak to a machine and let it assign the sentencing?
Well, that's already begun in some areas. There, all you're saying with the politicians are so corrupt. We need to appeal to our AI God here. It will give us an objective answer, and of course, that's not true at all.
I heard a local radio host today, and he I won't mention his name, so I'm not trying to be too hard on him, but he said we should be using license plate readers in Davidson County, Tennessee. Mm. He said lots of people are using them and they're effectively fighting crime. And he says, don't tell me about the surveillance stuff. They only surveil the people who are criminals.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah. And so then he goes to say this, and this is the misunderstanding we have today before God first and before Constitution second. He said, the first responsibility of government is to keep us safe. No, it is not.
That's right.
We have Declaration of Independence. That sentence, those words, collective words, but that long run on sentence of we have been endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. Among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. When you read, you have to believe that to be an American, I think.
That's right.
If you don't believe that, I say this from time to time to get a joke. If you don't believe those words, and you're a citizen, you need to repent of your citizenship and come to understand those words. I think they're the highest words ever written outside Scripture. I think that.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they're God-breathed, as our Holy Scripture is. Mm-hmm. But anyways, the first responsibility of government in America is to secure your rights. Mm-hmm. It is greatly incumbent upon the individual to provide their own security. Mm-hmm. Sure, we should have borders. I often get called or referred to as a Christian nationalist. Well, and I break that down. It is Christ and Constitution, and I'm in support of both because I'm not going to deny him. That has harsh circumstances.
Yes.
And
well, I agree with that. And that's the problem. You know, they come up with these terms, and then they define those terms in ways that we would not necessarily define them. And so they throw this term out there, Christian nationalists. Well, what does that mean? You know, and they define it in a way that you and I probably would not.
Well, they want to, but really mm-hmm. the nation is the Constitution. Mm-hmm. It is not the landmass. Even though we have borders, the landmass can shift. Mm-hmm. We have a Louisiana Purchase and the landmass gets bigger, right? Mm-hmm. So it is not the geographic boundaries. They're important and must be enforced. But really, the nation is the Constitution.
That's right.
And people struggle with that some. So I am a Christ and Constitution person. And if that means I'm a Christian nationalist, okay. Those who misdefine that term and use it as some negative slang, okay, fine.
There was just this week we had, as one of the left-wing news places, I don't remember if it was MSNBC or if it was CNN or whatever, but you had a couple of commentators and they were talking about the Declaration of Independence. And it's like, so there's this idea in there that our rights come from God. I don't know. That sounds like it's Christian nationalism or mixing religion with politics or something. And it's like, no, that is the basis. I mean, the only thing you have other than that is to say that the government is going to give you particular things, which means that it's a privilege and it's not a right. If it's contingent on the government granting it, and if it's contingent on your citizenship and not on your humanity, then it can be taken away or denied altogether for any reason.
And so, and I'll probably have to go in a couple minutes because mm-hmm. I've got a committee meeting today, but I think here's where we are, brother. I think most of our politicians have become inoculated against the law. They have become vaccinated against the Constitution. and I think that we're going to have to declare the word of an authority of God to them. And I know that sounds preachy, but mm-hmm. if you're an American and you believe that we've been endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, if I, the government, arbitrarily retrieve your rights from you, whose place have I taken?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is an idolatrous thing in these United States. It is building up a high place. If we allow a president, a governor, a state representative, a county commissioner to deprive you of your God-given rights without mm-hmm. the process, and we're doing that. We do that on gun laws in Tennessee. We did that when we declared people non-essential based on their occupations. We have done that in overtaxing people. Mm-hmm. And I think in this 250th year of these United States of America, and in this year in Tennessee, we need a little revolution. Now,
I agree. We need a revolution in our mind, don't we? Yeah.
Revolution of thought. Mm-hmm. We have to renew our minds back to what our founders understood. We have become so intellectually shallow in many circles in politics that we can't deduce right from wrong. It is not just that Ketanji Brown can't define a woman. It is the average politician can't read the Constitution.
That's right. Well, they don't like what it says. And that's my concern with the Article 5 thing is like, we got the people who won't follow the Constitution and you're going to have them change it, and write a different one or make it different. It's going to be the same people,
So when I first got in, I'm a John Birch Society member. I hate communism. Good. And I think the John Birch Society does a great job.
Yes, they do.
So I voted for the Article 5 thing because Article 5 is a part of the Constitution. But this, and it cost me in John Birch score. I've got the best John Birch Society score in Tennessee General Assembly, but it cost me. Right? This year, a good man, Jay Reedy, brings some controls in for the delegates, and it's still allowed. It's 25 or older, 5 years U.S. citizen. And it would allow a politician to be a part of it. I got to tell you, I look upstairs in the 7th floor and I can't name but many senators I would trust. I look around my 99 House members and I can name on one hand of people I might trust.
Mm-hmm.
If in general, these people can't be trusted to secure your rights regarding keeping and bearing arms or overtaxation, why would I ever trust them to go open up the Constitution? There is no that we can protect that. And that offends the Article 5 people when I say that. But short of tarring and feathering, and maybe much worse than that, there has to be a consequence that drives a behavior of loyalty and fidelity to oath. And we're mm-hmm. short of it today.
That's right. That's right. And that's the fundamental thing. That is really what is missing from America today. But thank you so much for bringing these issues up. And it is very important to run and to bring these issues up. And I certainly wish you the best. The primary in Tennessee is coming up in August. Is that correct?
August 6th is Election Day. Early voting starts on July 17. It'll run through August 1. Go to fritz4tn.com, my website. Check us out on all the social media platforms. We are very much a grassroots organization. I have no desire to raise the $20 million that Rose said he would win this. That's a profane thought.
That's
right. And that's coming from a tech person, right? Mm-hmm. Who the press won for English people, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's easy for folks to get on Senator Blackburn because she's got such a long and dark history in politics. Hasn't done anything for our rights. But look to your congressmen across this state or across the United States. How many have actually stood up for your right to defend yourself? How many have actually stood up for your right to not be taxed to death? It's a great minority, and we're in trouble with it. So the last thing to your viewers, whoever watches this, pray for this nation. Pray for the leaders. Pray that I'll do what's right and holy in God's eyes, and whatever works out for me in this thing. Pray that I'll remember my oath to the Constitution, and pray that I'll keep a servant's heart.
We will. We will. And thank you so much for doing that. I really do appreciate it. Again, the website is Fritz with two T's, four, TN as in Tennessee.com, Fritz4Tennessee.com. Easy to remember. Thank you so much for joining us, sir. And best luck to you and best wishes to you. Thank you.
Thank you. And I apologize for the confusion on the time. My Google Calendar was mixing back and forth between Central and Eastern. Thank you for your patience.
That's the problem we have here in Tennessee, isn't it?
It is. Yes, sir.
We have two different time zones that are here. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Listening to The David Knight Show.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars, and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is competing.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
Well, as we all know, the dropping of breadcrumbs from the Trump administration about UFOs is really accelerating. We don't have a day go by that we don't have either some phony meme from Trump or something else that is coming out there. And so the question is, what is really behind all of this? Is this simply a distraction? Is there something else? What do people think who have been following this for a very long time? All right, joining us now is Clyde Lewis. And I'm sure you've heard Clyde. He's been on radio for quite a while. I had a very wide network that was out there. You can find him still at groundzero.com. And he's also got a special, I think it's a subscription service. Is that correct, Clyde? Ground Zero Plus that's out there?
Yeah, we have a subscription service called groundzeroplus.com. But what we have done is not only can you subscribe to past shows and some of my past appearances on, you know, nightclub tours and things that I've done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You can listen to a full network. It's free. All you got to do is just go to the site, groundzeroplus.com, and we've got all kinds of many personalities, including you. You're on there. we have many personalities that, right, you know, that are there on the network, so you don't lose a show. You can hear a variety of shows right there at Ground Zero Plus. We're very happy to have you on board. We had a very successful interview with John B. Wells and several other people. So I think that, you know, we got a lot of great people that want to be a part of the network because they're forcing our hand. This is the whole idea behind the first, I guess you can call the inclination of the show or the creation of the network, but it fell. And so then we rebuilt it And now it's serving its purpose because of the way we're seeing other talk shows being attacked. Mm-hmm. We're seeing other talk shows, their empires are now, like Ben Shapiro and others, are falling apart. And we wanted to avoid that by banding together some of the great storytellers and news filers out there and put them under one umbrella so you could listen to them all at once.
That's super.
And
yeah.
I think that's going to be the future, is that mm-hmm. we have to band together. Otherwise, we're going to go together down into who knows what. So that's why we did it.
That's great. And so, yeah, I'm pleased to be on there. Again, that is Ground Zero. You spell out the zero and you spell out the plus.com. And that's where you can go to find out about that. And Clyde has been very kind to have me on several times as a guest. It's always a difficult thing for me to do because it's he'd be broadcasting live from the West Coast late at night. And so it was super late at night for me. And but I always appreciated coming on. It's always entertaining to be a part of the program as well. You always have great programs.
Well, you give me credibility. You know, that's the whole point. You get David Knight on because he gives me credibility.
Well, thank you.
I associate with cool people.
Well, you've had some health issues lately.
Yes,
let's talk a little bit about that because a lot of people have asked about that. You know, how is Clyde? And, you know, I know that you're recovering and so forth. So tell us a little bit about that. You've been gone for a little while.
Yeah, I've been gone since November. This is the longest I've ever had to be hospitalized because many people know that I'm resilient. I bounce back from near death. And people say, well, if you'd lose weight, that's not the point. The point is I gained weight because I've been near death. I've been having kidney problems. I had kidney cancer in 2007, 2008. And I had to revisit the doctors again because they had removed more tumors. So my kidneys basically got carved up really well, and I've got about 3/4 kidneys on each side, keeping me pumping and living. Well, that didn't work out just before Thanksgiving when I collapsed from kidney failure.
Wow.
And it was really, I had never experienced anything like that in my life. Kidney failure is just a weird way to get close to dying. And I didn't realize this, but I learned a lot about kidneys and toxifying and what. And sometimes if the kidneys are too toxic, which is what happens when you have kidney failure, you start hallucinating. Mm. And so I had some very wild hallucinations while recovering and being on dialysis for about 4 days. And
did you meet the aliens that Trump wants to introduce us to?
Actually, no, I met the demons that have always been under my bed. I always tell people, I'm joking, I have demons under my bed, but there really were this time. And it was like when I woke up, everything was like kind of like moving together, like one of those little puzzles we used to play with in school. And it was very difficult. In fact, there were many times the nurses told me that I would call 911 and tell them to get me out of the hospital because I didn't belong here. So, and you have to learn how to walk again because you actually have water buildup in your body. Apparently when they found me, they had to take, I think it was like 20 liters out of my body at the time.
Wow. Wow.
So, I mean, I don't know how I survived that, but I did.
Well, it's difficult anytime you're in the bed.
Convalescing.
Yeah. Since anytime you're in the bed for an extended period of time, like it was when I had my stroke, it really takes a lot out of you. I couldn't walk for quite a while.
Yeah.
And even after I started walking, and even today, I feel very weak and many times have difficulty with balance. And so that's mm-hmm. the issue. It's this long bed rest. It really takes a toll on you as well. But I wanted to get you on because
bed rest, you're right.
Yeah. I wanted to get you on and talk about this UFO stuff because I know that you covered that quite a bit. It's not somewhere where I hang out, but it is, they are constant. Not a day goes by that we don't get some memes or some trolling from Trump or somebody in the administration about the aliens are coming and all the rest of this stuff. What do you make out? You've covered this beat for a very long time. What do you make out of all this stuff?
Well, the funny thing is that I've covered this beat for, you know, 31 years. And I remember back in the day I was Crazy Clyde. Now I'm not crazy anymore. And it's like, but the problem is, it's not like I had planned it. It's not like I had imagined it back 30 years ago when I was talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking about, you know, what this would do to humanity. How would we deal with it? I mean, I based everything off of Arthur C. Clarke's Childhood's End. I don't know if anybody read any of that, read that book, but that book pretty much gives a science fiction genius's take on what would happen if we found out aliens existed. Mm-hmm. And it would be like, you know, what happened with religion, what would happen with all these other things. And what I learned over time was, you know, while everybody is still worried about whether or not aliens would destroy the government, we'd all have to come together as one new world order under the Antichrist or whatever they want to talk about, it's not about that per se. It's about the shift of putting a new costume on an old god. And I think that's what people are concerned with. I don't think that this whole idea of disclosure is going to be anything but an interpretation, just one more interpretation of the government. And even then, when they released the documents, they didn't release anything unidentified. And I think what people were expecting was identified. It's like, oh, the unidentified flying object cases have been, but what we want is we want identified. We want the government to identify them. We want the government to tell us what they are. We want the government to warn us if they're hostile. We want the government to warn us if we all like to throw our hands in the air and go join the Martians or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that what's going on is after, you know, more than 60 or 70 years of indoctrination, I think there's a majority of Americans and a majority of people who are religious who can pretty much weigh both of them together at the same time. Mm-hmm. I mean, the hard part would be the idea of, like I said, putting a new costume on an old god. And I think that's what science has been doing for some time, taking science and saying, follow science, forget God. Mm-hmm. And so you have all of these people running around saying, well, aliens are demons. No, they're not demons. demons are spiritual beings, and I stick by that. I think that, yeah, we can have incarnate demons who could be coming down and flying saucers, but I highly doubt it. The thing that I think people need to understand is that when they're dealing with something like this, it's hard to tell the difference between what an alien encounter would be like as opposed to a spiritual encounter. Mm-hmm. Meaning that if an angel came down tomorrow in a big bright light and told you to come to heaven with him, and you did that, it's no different than a big giant gray coming down out of the sky and inviting you to go to heaven with him. It's the same experience, although you put a different costume on it. So it's just the idea of how we costume this. And so far, they haven't put anything on. But I think that if you want to take it to the extreme, what they would probably do if they were to do anything at all is they would probably turn the nails or turn the screws in favor of saying that perhaps the aliens were the Old Testament gods. Mm-hmm. And that we need to understand that, you know, all the things we read in the Old Testament and the Bible they won't touch the New Testament because that's, of course, where Christianity has all of its stuff. And like I say, any of these alien things that get revealed have nothing to do with your salvation. Mm-hmm. And they won't have any, as long as they don't tinker with Jesus. If they're tinkering with Jesus and say that he's an alien, that his atonement was not divine or what have you, they're killing Christianity. But if they go back and they say, well, take a look at the history of the gods. You take a look at the way they treated the Hebrews and how they treated the Egyptians and what happened, such marvels with Egyptian magic and Moses and all this stuff. Enoch, people love to just go back and talk about Enoch, which isn't canon, by the way. But they go back and they try to talk about Enoch and they talk about all this stuff. They talk about Genesis 6, where there are these titans that came down out of the sky and had sex with the women at the time. They talk about Sodom and Gomorrah, where a bunch of, quote, angels or aliens came in, laid a city to waste, and mm-hmm. it was kind of like a nuclear explosion they can compare it to. But again, that's putting a new costume on an old concept. Mm-hmm. And so if you took the new costume of aliens and put that on the concepts you read in the Old Testament, I really don't think you'd find a difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, chariots of fire, put a new costume on the chariots of fire, you have a UFO. Wheel in the sky, Ezekiel sees a wheel in the sky. Let's put a new costume on that. What you have is you have a bona fide flying saucer with beings that were in there that looked like eagles and bulls and mm-hmm. all this stuff. It's all being described in the Bible, but you put a new costume on it and it'll take a while to program people, as in the book, Childhood Zen, it took 100 years to reprogram people to accept the the look of what the aliens look like. And what's really ironic about that is that every Christian that's out there saying that aliens are demons, they would have everything they say be, I think they say, well, see, even in the childhood Zen, you're dealing with the demon alien thing. And I won't give it away, but it's still an irony that I laugh at, because I'm fighting like hell to say I don't like putting peas with my potatoes. You know, I don't like doing the peas with my potatoes. I like to separate them. And so what I do is I tend to say, well, I don't want my aliens and my demons to be the same thing. I just don't want that. I want it to be different in that way. And so I guess people take it, but a lot of people won't. They'll just say, and I say to them, look, the only thing I got going for me on this is that back when Jesus was with the demoniac in the Bible, he didn't cast out aliens, okay? He cast out demons from that demoniac, and the demons were spiritual. The demons were spiritual beings, and they did demanded to be put into pigs because they didn't have a body. And so that's the thing, is that if they cast out the demons in the Bible and cast them into aliens, that would be a different story altogether, but they didn't.
You know, it's interesting, especially when you mention about childhood Zen. Now, I did not read the book by Arthur C. Clarke, but I did see the sci-fi series that they did. And Charles Dance was the actor that they had there. And they made him up to look like a kind of medieval representation of Satan, right? So he's got the,
yes, and
the
that's
red
exactly,
costume.
Yes, yeah. That's exactly.
And it's pretty amazing. I mean,
what it's like in the book.
Yeah, yeah. I would tell people, if you, you know, just look it up even on Google and childhood, and it is amazing how they made him up. And of course, they did it in a way, he said, it took a very long time for them to put the makeup on all the time, but he was still able to come across as an actor, that he was able to, even with all that makeup on, he was able to act. And it is the stereotypical medieval representation of Satan. He's got the tail, the cloved hooves. He's red. He's got the big horns and all the rest of this stuff. And
the wings.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, they come from this planet that is continuous fire and everything. So when we look at it, Arthur C. Clarke is trying to combine these elements of these traditions together in a kind of a synthesis type of way. And there we go. We got the picture of it. Lance put up what he looks like. And I referred to that when I've talked about it. I talked about this about a decade ago at a conference where they're talking about a lot of UFOs, and that was my take on it. But there's another aspect of this as well, and that is the, I think it's DMT, the where people take this drug and they say they see machine elves and things like that. I'd like to get your take on that, because a lot of people, they see something that is very, very similar when they take this drug, even to the extent that some of them are saying, hey, we're going to call ourselves psychonauts instead of astronauts. And we're going to document what we encounter there. And some of them are saying, hey, we're getting information from these beings and so forth. What do you make of that?
It's funny you should bring it up, because I was just watching a lecture the other day about how, what if they were to tell you that the aliens are not from outer space? That would make it even more terrifying. And the reason why is because what it would be is it would be interdimensional, ultra-terrestrial. In other words, they're with us all the time. We just don't see them. And unless we can open up a patch of our brain that opens up to that seeing it, then, you know, they're with us, so they can cause all kinds of problems that we can blame on, you know, fate, miracles, or what have you. And I think that's kind of an interesting point, because, you know, a lot of the realms that are unseen are considered spiritual realms, interdimensional realms. And, and now with quantum physics, we go into deeper, you know, threads of string theory, and we keep going to dark matter. And we keep, you know, it's just breaking things down to the point where, are you going to run out of things to break down? And in there somewhere is aliens or ghosts or whatever. If you've ever seen the movie Interstellar, you'll know what I'm talking about, because it's funny how he becomes his own ghost as he's going through the black hole. And that's called superposition. And what that is that you can be in two places at one time, and so can the aliens, and so can, and so that's even more terrifying, that they could appear like all of a sudden everywhere all at once. And this is where you get your definite alien invasion, not some holographic thing they're making up in conspiracy circles. You'll have this simultaneous appearance of these aliens, or these simultaneous experiences that people have all at once, like all the phones could be ringing at once or something else that they can do that they can, you know, flip a few switches on the planet and immediately they have control of it all. And that's something that I think that you could go back, that's many people still believe in, and that's fairies and the fairy folk and the little people, and how, like, you go to Iceland and those places, they still believe in elves. They believe in those creatures. They live in the forest. They live in the woods. Then you go from there. You go, you know, Santa Claus is the first fairy person. And then you go to, like, Krampus, and you go down the list of all these gnomes. And so then you come from there to the dwarves. And then from the dwarves, you've got leprechauns. From leprechauns, you've got aliens or something. They're little green men or they're little gray men, and they're taking kids or whomever into their caves, and then they don't see them again. Mm-hmm. So it's the same story again. Take the costume, change the costume, and put it on another character, and you have the same character. So somewhere out there, we have in our subconscious mind, aka the machine elves, when you're taking DMT, that's in our mind, and it's there. And the only way that it happens, we see it, is when something touches a certain part of our brain. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes interdimensional, ultra-terrestrial. And that's, I think, more frightening than space, because if they come from space, we know that we can control them. If they come from interdimensional realities, there's no telling what they can do. They have no handle on what the Earth keeps it from doing.
That's right. That's right. And I've heard many people who are secular scientists say, well, I don't think it'd be interdimensional beings if you look at, you know, how long they have to travel. I mean, once we get out of the confines of, you know, three-dimensional space or even the fourth dimension of time and things like that, once we get out of those confines, it does really get kind of frightening. And yet, as you point out, there is this tradition of a lot of people who have encountered things like this. And of course, how do we perceive this? How do we put a context on this? As a Christian, well, my context is going to be in the Bible. Yeah. But, you know, when we look at this, clearly there is something that is supernatural, that is above nature, that we experience in our dimension. Mm-hmm. And so we've got a lot of people saying, well, maybe we live in a simulation. Maybe these are interdimensional beings and so forth. And the answer is, yeah, really, because when you look at this, I just read a testimony of an individual who is an atheist. He was a quantum working on quantum physics. And it was because of the strange things that he was seeing that he became a Christian ultimately. He started looking for answers as to how does this all fit together. And so I don't necessarily think that, depending on where you're coming from, if you see this, if you've got a perspective where you're viewing the world, what your worldview is from your perspective, does this make sense? Does it break the paradigm of the Bible? And I don't think it does. What it does is it just looks at it from a different angle, perhaps, but the real worldview, if you're a Christian, is still going to be based on the Bible, and there's nothing in any of that stuff that really directly contradicts that in terms of a created order.
Well, look at all the costumes. Look at all the costumes God has for different religions that exist, right? You've got Allah, you've got Jehovah, you've got you've got Ishtar, Vishnu, you got all these other gods, you got Buddha, and you've got them all there, all with different costumes, all with different names. You say, well, they're different. Well, maybe they are, maybe they aren't different. But see, that's the thing, is that what you're getting into now is we're getting into the idea that we have to change the way, we have to change the Hallmark card version of God and religion and put it more towards a scientific view. And I can tell you now that even though in Arthur C. Clarke's book, he said two things were destroyed when the aliens arrived. One was science and the other was religion. And the reason why is because people were so fascinated by the aliens, they didn't want to study any more science. And they were so fascinated by the aliens, they didn't care if God existed. They ignored God. Now, that's what you have to worry about. You have to worry about the fact whether or not the aliens come and people start ignoring God, because that's the way you kill God, is you ignore him. You want to kill a God, just ignore him. That's how it works. But here's the thing. Christianity has lasted 2,000 years, and they've had several other different costumes put on gods, Jesus, and what have you, from Mithras to Odin to Loki to whomever. They all have different costumes and different names, but the stories all seem to be patterned after the same story. And we keep telling the story over and over again with different variations. So this is just one more variation that we add to the pile. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with entertaining it. It's just whether or not you decide you're going to give your life to the aliens. And then you start running into, you know, religious arguments about whether or not they're gods. But, you know, quite frankly, everything that's happening, if it's not ultra-terrestrial, it's extraterrestrial. Mm-hmm. So that, therefore, a being that's controlling everything from out there in heaven is an extraterrestrial. We mm-hmm. die, we go to heaven. Why is that? Because mm-hmm. that's where we came from. Mm-hmm. We came from heaven. We're back to going back into space, because that's where we're going to end up again, in the presence of the major force, which would be God, mm-hmm. or the grand order of developers, G-O-D, God. And that's his, and it's just, again, one more costume that we put on to cover or tell the same story again.
Yeah, when I look at it, it's very much like the flood story. You know, there's so many different flood stories from different civilizations. And, mm-hmm. you know, when you look at all of these and you look at different elements of it, you know, you got the Chinese have the flood story, and many of the aspects of Genesis are reflected in a lot of the picture characters that they use, of course. And so they have something for a large ship, you know, that's like a little boat with eight people in it, you know, just like Noah's boat. And on and on. And they have things that refer back to the Garden of Eden and stuff like that. And so when you look at that, it's like, well, okay, so I think these things are all based on something that is true. The question is, which of these costumes is accurate and which of the stories is accurate? Perhaps, you would have to admit there's a possibility that the true story did propagate through, and that these other things are variations that have drifted on that. And so I think, as a Christian, that's the worldview from where I look at these different things. It doesn't rack my faith to see the story of Gilgamesh. It's like, well, that's kind of similar to Genesis, I could see, where if this is true, you would have one story that would propagate straight through, and you have all these other ones that are minor variations of it with a different spin on it.
Yeah. So you read through the Iliad, and you read through the Odyssey, and you read all these old books, and you tend to see some duplication, you know, in the Bible. You see duplication, and it's because everything, I mean, hell, you look at Star Wars and can make comparisons to Star Wars and the religions of today, except they put a different costume on them. Instead of Satan, you have the Dark Father, which is Darth Vader. You have all of these different characters. In the Matrix, it's another religious type of look of the Chosen One, and the Chosen One is able to go in and make different changes to the Matrix. I mean, these stories continue and continue and continue. Now, we're not going to be around long enough to see how these stories evolve in 500 years. But I can imagine within 500 years of time, these stories could eventually or certainly become religions. That could happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you look at the secular approach of this, or the atheistic approach of this, they will say, well, you know, the story of Christ and redemption and rebirth and resurrection and things. We've seen that in stories that were older from another country, culture or something. And so this is changed and plagiarized from that. But the reality is that in a sense, in the Bible, clearly the other side, Satan, understands that this is something that is going to happen in some way, shape, or form. He doesn't have it exactly clear. And so it would make sense that there would be some other versions of that that would be out there to push against it. I mean, the film critic, Brian Godawa, who is a Christian, and he actually he did a very interesting film. It's called To End All Wars, I think. I don't know if you ever saw that or not. But he says in his film critics, and especially criticisms, and especially in terms of just writing about stories in general, he said, there's always this redemption theme that is always there, and it's just fixed. And he said, you look at it and you can basically find it in any story that's out there. And it's what makes a story good, because it really reflects the reality, the greater reality that is there.
Right.
So there are some commonalities that are there that are based in reality, I believe. And we've been we've seen versions of the true story that have evolved and changed. We have the true story that perhaps has been deliberately corrupted in some ways. And so that's the way I look at all of this this UFO stuff that is out there. Is my son, who's Lance, who's doing the board right now said, "What? When do we get the IFO files, the identified flying objects?"
Yeah, so they know what they are instead of these little dots and saying, "Ooh, isn't that weird?" Yeah, well, we've been saying, "Ooh, isn't that weird?" for 70 years. What's also interesting is the timing of movies. They're going to have a disclosure day
come
out in June. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're saying would be the time that Trump will just come right out and say, "Oh, by the way, we're being visited. We've been visited," that kind of thing. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think the religion is going to be turned on its ear. I don't believe any of that's going to happen. All that panic of aliens or demons and all this stuff. I think people need to realize that we need to grow up and understand that over time, things change, ideas change. And those ideas are not dangerous. Those ideas are there to be heard, and then you can choose whether or not they're real. Mm. And if people choose to see that they're real, or they choose to change, or they want to go to a quantum Bible, if they want to go to a quantum way of thinking of Jesus in a quantum way, that's what's going to happen. Eventually it's going to happen because new information is going to come out. And I said on another show, I said, here's something else. Here's the thing about church and religion that people don't understand. Religion is all based on faith. So if you're looking for something to prove that what you've been doing all along, worshiping God, is factual, then you have no reason for religion, because religion is faith. And if you have a knowledge of it, you say, "Oh, I have proof of God, and here it is." And mm-hmm. and you got a picture of God like standing there, you know, holding his hands out, you know, in a robe, you know, look like Barry Gibb. Yeah, okay, you got a picture of God. But I'm just saying that, you know, that takes away your faith right there. There's no faith. There's no hope. There's nothing. There's all this truth. You know, I got the truth. Well, no, you have a very interesting way of interpreting what you see is there. And you have faith that your words are going to somehow touch other people, because that's what spirituality is about. That's what the continuity of the story is about. You need the continuity of the word. The continuity of, in many cases, the Bible, the continuity of the Talmud, the continuity of the Quran. They need to keep that going because those stories are important to our lives. Mm-hmm. And those stories aren't going to change. They're just going to evolve over time and put on a different costume. I think people need to understand that we're living in those times right now, and they really don't have to feel threatened. They just have to understand that it happens sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it is, when we look at faith Paul defined it. He says substance is the substance of things that are hoped for, right? And when he talks about hope, that word is not like, you know, we use it today, modern usage of hope, like, "Well, I certainly hope so, but I don't think that's going to happen." You know, usually put that there. It's like a wishful thinking or something. No, hope for them was confident expectation. And so we have a confident expectation because we have evidence of things that are unseen. So there is an unseen world, and Christians have always understood that. But we see that there are evidences in the real world of that. I mean, even when we look at the people, ancient people would look at the stars, for example. There was a pattern that they could discern. We have a lot more evidence of things unseen today when we look at our bodies, for example. When we look at DNA. So you got Crick and Watson, who discovered DNA, and it's like, okay, well, there's obviously intelligence that has created this and put this together. There's obviously design and intelligence right here. This is a code and so forth. But we got to rule out that there is a God of the Bible. So we'll create panspermia, and we'll say that this is aliens who came here and created this. So, again, you get back to somebody's worldview, which is going to drive the way they interpret the evidence that they see, and that's going to be how they explain the things that are unseen, which we really understand are
there.
For me,
panspermia proves God. That's one of the things that one of my pet topics is panspermia. And I always said to myself, you know, panspermia to me proves that God was like Johnny Appleseed, you know, and that single-celled organisms and whatever traveled on you know, little asteroids and hit the planet. I mean, it kind of reminds me of, you know, when we were in health class and they always show us the cervix, right? Mm-hmm. And you see what looks like a planet. It's this bright white where the egg is, and there's this bright white area. And then you see this little squiggly thing that's a sperm that's going to penetrate that egg. And what it looks like to me is planet Earth with a little comet coming down, and it's going to penetrate that egg. And it's the same I mean, like, again, a different costume for a different idea. And you know, you try to express that, and some people think you're crazy. But, I mean, you just put on different lenses for different things. And I think that if you tear away the, I always say the Hallmark card version of everything, is I know a lot of people have these idealistic views of what it's all about. Mm-hmm. They don't realize that when Jesus died, it was a violent death. They don't realize that a lot of blood and guts were being torn apart to become, you know, a Christian, or mm-hmm. being persecuted as the Hebrews were, or whatever. Those are some pretty ugly stories. So mm-hmm. what happens, you come along and you have the Renaissance where they're putting a costume on everything. You get to see what Jesus looks like. He's a bearded guy, whatever. And then there are people that say, well, I want to be a purist. I don't think Jesus looked like that at all. And in fact, I'm not going to call him Jesus. I'm going to call him Yahweh, or I'm going to do this. It's like, again, they're trying to put a costume on something so that they can be unique and understood. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the same thing with aliens, except science is doing that. Science, the halfway point between God and the rest of everything else, is aliens or a group of scientists that are advanced, more advanced than we are. Like I said, a grand order of developers, or God, G-O-D, mm-hmm. and they're there, and they've developed this planet. They developed other planets. They panspermia other planets, and they're all in waiting to become planets with civilizations on them. Everyone is evolving into the next phase or into the next loop. And so I think that that's one of the reasons why you're not going to get much from the governments, because I think they don't know. They know the material, and they know what they see, and they know what they've heard from, you know, some of the reports, but they really don't know what they're dealing with.
Yeah.
It's because they think they're so superior minded that, you know, it's like if Jesus was to walk in and sit down with Donald Trump and say, oh, by the way, I'm coming next week and we're going to destroy the planet and all the evil people, what's your answer? And he'd say, oh, I don't know, maybe global thermonuclear war. Do you think that would work? You know, it's just how they think.
Yeah.
Right. Don't think along the lines of miracles, in my opinion. I mean, one of the things I loved about doing my show back 30 years ago was I was such, idealistic miracle guy. You know, everything that happened was a miracle. Now, for some reason, miracles happen and they're from Satan. And I never, that's how things have evolved since I first started, was, you know, you could talk about aliens and you could say they're miracles. You could talk about paranormal activity and like ghosts appearing in the road, a miracle. Now, as you say, it's just, well, that's of the devil, Clyde. I can tell you where it's of the devil, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, no, I mean, don't you believe in, you know, basic magic? Well, no, magic is witches. No. Magic is like the force. I mean, you think the force is being carried out by witches? I mean, it's just, like I say, different costumes for different ideas. And I think we need to learn that and mature in that, rather than freaking out and panicking and saying, oh, this is a distraction from the Epstein files. Oh, no, we all sound like whining little kids who aren't getting our way with regard to these files. And I think there may be some distractions out there, but it's not from the Epstein files. I can tell you that right now.
Well, you know, it is interesting when we look at this. I don't have any, as a Christian, I don't have any concern about something that is immaterial and then material, you know, going back and forth. And so the fact that they are finding, you know, if they find something that is material that they can produce and that they can hold, to me, that is just, you know, it doesn't really mean anything to me. When you look at the story of Christ after his resurrection, he's appearing to the disciples and he is, you know, transporting from one place to the other. He is eating with them, and then he invites them to stick their hand inside of his wound. And then, you know, you're actually touching him and so forth. And all of a sudden he disappears or walks through a wall or whatever. And so, know, if you believe the Bible, that type of thing, having different dimensions and being able to be substantive and physical, and we're starting to see some stories about that. You know, it's interesting. There's a pastor out of Austin that has written a book. He's collected over 1,000 near-death experiences. And when he looks at it, he says, you know, I think because we have this ability to bring back bodies from a state that always in the past was beyond being able to bring bodies back, he said, I think we're starting to see these accounts. And he looks at it from a Christian perspective. He said, you know, we got a lot of different stories out there, and I have friends, I looked at that book and I said, you know, what do you think about this? And said, oh, it's all, like you said, it's all satanic. I don't want to talk about that, you know? And right. I think we need to look at that. Right, but right, his right. perspective on it was, he said, I'm seeing stories from people who are Buddhists, not Christians, different parts of the world. And he said, they might interpret this stuff differently, but he said, basically they're having the same experience. And like you said, they're putting different clothing on it. He's had situations, one guy who was a Buddhist, he never knew anything about Christianity, and he immigrated to the United States after he had one of these. His daughter invited him to a church at some point in time, and he starts hearing the story for the first time. He goes, well, that matches up with what I had seen, right? And he wound up becoming a pastor, a Christian pastor himself, because it matched up with what he had seen. So it's how you interpret the data. And again, that comes back to your worldview that's there. Right. So this guy is putting it together. And he said, here's 1,000 stories or so that I've put together, and I can see the elements there that match up better than anything else with the Christian narrative that's there. So he says, it really bolsters my faith. And he said, I think we have something here because of the medical technology that's there. We've seen, just like you see with DNA, we have a new kind of witness, a new kind of evidence of things unseen.
Yeah. I just remembered a story from the Bible. Remember the story about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego?
Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego,
Abednego, yeah. It's funny, I read the Bible so many times, I still can't get these guys right. I still
Well, we all have these shibboleths. You know, everybody's talking about Trump's ballroom, and I never pronounce B-A-A-L as ball. Some people do. I always thought it's Baal.
Yeah.
You know, so we got these different ways Baal. Of pronouncing. Who knows what's right? I don't really know.
So You have those three guys. You have those three guys going into Nebuchadnezzar's furnace, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you read about in the Bible, it says they went into the furnace, but they weren't completely consumed, and they disappeared, and then they came back with someone else. And so they reappeared in the furnace, and they brought something else with them. Now, let's put it on a different costume. You ready? Put on a different costume. I see that all the time when I watch Star Trek. They go into this room, they're not totally consumed, but they do disappear in a molecular way, and then they reappear in that same area.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about a teleport machine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what if Nebuchadnezzar had a teleporter? And I mean, but I know that sounds outrageous, but think about it. If you put a new costume on it, anything sounds outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, understand that that's all it is. They're trying to put a new costume on old things. And you could have fun with it and still, you know, get your, you know, message across. I think people are taking themselves too seriously.
Mm.
And that's the problem, is they say, oh, aliens, miracles are of the devil. And I'm, no, not really, not always.
Yeah, it's interesting when you were talking about childhood's end and the implications to it and that type of thing, and that science died, religion died, and that type of thing. I'm looking at artificial intelligence, and you can see elements of that as well. You know, people coming in and it's like, okay, it does everything for me, you know, just like some powerful alien intelligence, and it does everything for me. So I don't need to learn anything. I don't need to make any effort to create art or to create music or anything. I just sit back and let it do it because I like its product that it does. And so it pacifies people in that regard. And then they just take it as if it is God's word or whatever. I mean, we got situations of people going with artificial intelligence and saying, I can't trust these human politicians. Let me get the AI to act as judge and jury, to act as our administrators and so forth, because I can trust that. It's a fundamental misunderstanding of what it is. But nevertheless, I can see elements of that already creeping in. That's kind of what we were wired to worship other things that are not really true.
Yeah. Well, do you know what I see in this AI stuff and the way they use it? I see it as a modern day Ouija board. See it as just, it's being used in the same way, except it's not necromancy that they're doing. They're not calling upon the dead, but they're calling upon some ghost in the machine that seems to love to manipulate and cause people to commit suicide or cause people to do strange things because people lose their minds in the metaverse. And so, yes, I tend to think that, when you look at an AI, if it's used in the wrong way, it could be seen as a modern day electronic Ouija board. Did they get all their information from it like that?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's a pretty good way to look at it. Yeah, I think it's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting to see Richard Dawkins, you know, Mr. I'm going to talk only about reason and things that I can touch and so forth. And then he thinks he has an episode of AI psychosis, as many people are starting to call this situation. It's like, you don't really understand what that is. And so, you know, he's...
even the most strident, you know, God haters to basically try to rethink their positions, you know.
That's right. And strident God hater.
Stephen Hawking later in his life.
Yeah. Yeah. Strident God hater because, you know, he wants to, I have to have physical evidence, things that I can touch and so forth. And he just he just completely goes off the rail when he encounters this stuff. And I think it's interesting because it kind of tells us something about what we are anchored in. You know, I just thought as we were talking here, there was it was on a Christian news site where they talk about different things that people have. It doesn't focus on the supernatural, whatever. It's typically news about some pastor who's gone off the rails and molested somebody or something. You know, so it's typically that kind of news. But they had a they had a guy who was had a truck fall on him, and it was an amazing story that the guy survived. It was a large truck, and it came off of the supports, and it crushed him, and it severed. Like five major arteries. They said typically somebody bleeds out. If you just have one of them severed, you're going to bleed out in a couple of minutes. But he lasted for a couple of hours. And he was coming in out of consciousness, and he was having some of these classic near-death experiences, even to the extent that it compressed his spine nearly flat. And so they couldn't get him out. They all thought he was basically cut in half, and he nearly was cut in half. And he said, as he started to leave his body and look down, he saw these two big guys on either side of him. And, you know, he's starting to drift off and everything. Then he gets brought back and he gets back in and he looks around and they're not there anymore. And then it happens again a second time. And there was somebody who came in that was with the EMS stuff and a new Christian, and they're sitting there praying for him and everything. He said, I think that that's what really happened with him. But afterwards, and it was about a year later, he goes to this group of EMS people, and they were all amazed. It's like, this is our miracle guy. You know, he made it through. Nobody thought he could make it through. We don't know still to this day how he didn't bleed out. And he said it was a large group of them, and he picked out the six or eight people that were there. And he says, as a matter of fact, you two came in from the back door. And the rest of you came in from the front door. And they go, whoa, that's strange. They said, yeah, we did, actually, because we got lost coming around there. So we came in through the back door. And he was able to pick out all of these people out of this crowd that were there. It was a very vivid experience to him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he looked at it and he said, you know, I kind of thought afterwards, maybe it was, you know, these guys that were there and they were not there. He said, maybe they were angels, you know. And so it really is kind of interesting when you look at the reality, the supernatural reality, the reality that is above nature and above what we see, that's where you start to see these types of things. And it's the kind of stuff that for years you've talked to people in the, I guess, how would you characterize it? It's kind of the, you know, the woo-woo area. where the supernatural stuff starts to come in and everybody has different interpretations of it, as you pointed out.
With me, I try to teach people of new things. Like, for example, what you're talking about, that guy said that two guys were accompanying him. Those things are called psychopomps. And when you say that, people say, what are you talking about, psychopomps? Psychopomps are escorts into the other world. And they've been talked about before with, like, I think it's Chiron, the guy that runs the boat on the River Styx, and you pay the ferryman, and he takes you to the other side. That's a story as old as time, the idea that you're escorted. In fact, the comic book, The Crow, deals with a psychopomp that is a crow. It basically, some people have birds that take them to the other side. It's always been, you know, something is there waiting for you to help you and find your way into heaven. You're not left alone, from what I understand. So, I mean, some people say, well, I was alone. Usually they have a bad experience. But if you're having a good experience, usually there are people that are accompanying you, whether it be parents, dead parents, old, you know, maybe children that have passed early on. People have even said that they've been accompanied by children that haven't been born yet. So, I mean, you go through that idea that there's something there interdimensionally that when you pass, the brain opens up to a whole, it's like a walnut. It opens up to a whole new world. I guess you could call it the one network. It's severed and you hook up to another network and you move on. That's, again, putting a costume on your Hallmark version of going to a sponge colored world with a harp. And, I think that kind of idea of life after death is boring. I would hope that I'm not going to some sponge colored world in a terry cloth robe and singing Kumbaya for eternity. I just don't like that idea.
Well, but, there's a Christian writer, Randy Alcorn. He's done a lot of, novels and things like that, but he did a book, basically said, so what does the Bible really say about heaven? Is it, this sponge world where we float around on clouds and play harps? Because it does sound boring, you know? And, he said, Well, no, actually, when you look at that and, you start to actually, read between the lines in a sense and start to look at it in terms of context, he says, we were created by God to work. And so that is something that is really kind of in our nature, right? And what happened in the Garden of Eden was that work was cursed. It was made difficult. But, what if it wasn't difficult? And what would we do? And what types of things would we be doing, on a new heaven and a new earth? And so there is a different way to look at this. And, some of the stereotypes that we have picked up, even when you look at things like It's a Wonderful Life, you got to get your wings and all this other stuff. There's a lot of...
I was going to say, I know what I want to do in the afterlife. I want to be on Ouija board duty. I want to be on Ouija board duty. So I scare the hell out of those teenagers playing with the Ouija board. Hey, can I have Ouija board duty tonight? Yeah, it'd be fun. Don't scare those kids.
Yeah, who will go be a deceiving spirit in their lives? I'll volunteer.
I want to be a deceiving spirit. I'll volunteer. Yeah.
Well, it certainly is interesting.
Give me something to think about.
That is something to think about, isn't it? So it's something that we all face in one way or the other, and so we need to think about the ultimate reality, which is something that is far different really than what we're all encountering. I think we're all going to be surprised to a large degree about what we see because of preconceptions and because of cultural influences and things that we've had. And so it's hard to escape those types of things. It's hard to escape the reality that we live in and to think about something that is so much greater. And, of course, certainly we can't imagine God. He would, be able to create this. It's beyond anything we can imagine. So when you look at the Bible and you see these contradictions that are there, they're typically about God. When it talks about humans, it's like, I can see that. It makes sense. But when you look at God, there's like, well, that doesn't make sense. How could that be and that be at the same time? It's testimony to the accuracy of that is that it would be a mystery as to how these things, unlike anything that we see in this world, could exist.
I think what we got is we've got at one time a sense of wonder mankind had because it was just between him, the stars, and God. Mm-hmm. And it was always a wonder to have things happen that were like unexplainable. So they looked to the heavens and they'd see eclipses, or they'd see the moon turn to blood, or they'd see anything like that. And that to them was signifying that something big was going down. It's something that, even you read the ancients would all look at star charts and they'd do all that. And now we don't do that anymore. You know why? I think the older civilization gets, the more cynical it becomes. And I think that hopefully we can find the miracles that'll put us back in that idea of wonderment. Because I just feel like, we're lacking imagination. Movies aren't the same anymore. Music's not the same anymore. Mm-hmm, it's like cookie cutter. And it's because of AI. It's because people just don't want to imagine anymore. Or people tell you, you can't think that way. I would hope that the world wouldn't end up that way. But then again, I'm getting too old. I have to admit now that I'm getting older because, I've been hospitalized since November. But it's just, I would hope that, what we do is contributing to at least the knowledge and wonderment of what life truly is about. Mm-hmm. And that is surprises. And that is, expect the unexpected. Mm-hmm. Those are the roller coaster rides I love. It's like that story about, you know, do I want to ride a merry-go-round that makes me sick and goes up and down, or do we want to ride a roller coaster where there are dips and all kinds of things where you feel like you're going to die, but you don't, you survive it and you feel you can survive another day. That's when you start thinking about, rather than thinking about all these doom and gloom things. I mean, we assess them to try to make them less doom and gloom, but otherwise, you know, it's like we take things, and it, like you said, there was too many things to follow, too many distractions to follow, that we need to focus on certain things and then move on to the other thing. And if we don't have time for it, we just kind of put it in the back, mm-hmm. on the back burner a bit and then go with something else. And I think we're having a hard time doing that.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people are like when discounting miracles and they're saying, oh, this can't happen. But it's happening. How can you deny it? It's happening in front of you.
That's right.
And that's the same with this alien thing. They're not giving us much, but when they do dump the idea on you, then the novelty of aliens goes out the window.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to really start seriously thinking about what this means for you as a human being,
yeah.
rather than, you know, dressing up on Halloween as an alien or, you know, pretending that there are aliens under your bed or whatever. No, this is real now. It's real.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you going to handle that? And I think that a lot of people don't even think up to. They're going to have to.
Yeah. And I think it'll be it might actually be a positive thing, because what you mentioned was the fact that so much wonder has really left us. You know, as we get older and as society mm-hmm. and civilization gets older, the wonder is gone. But a lot of it has to do with what we do in terms of approaching things. And as you were talking about that, I was thinking about how I had, when I was taking biology classes and science classes as a child, they had reduced everything down to literally the bare bones of fossils. And it's like, okay, so here's a bone of such and such, and look at how it's similar to this and that. Therefore, this came from that, and so forth, in order to impose this evolutionary hierarchy that they had on it. And there was really nothing very interesting about that, especially when you look at the animals. You know, when you look at the animals that we got around us, you got a lion that's got the mane, you got zebras that got stripes, and bright colored animals that are out there, and yet, when you would look at their reconstruction from dinosaur fossils or something like that, it would always be this drab green or drab gray or something like that. And it's like, wait, you don't think there was any hair or any kind of cartilage that would make the animal look interesting and all that kind of stuff. But then we started looking at this with my kids when I was doing homeschool with them. We started taking a look at biology from a standpoint of design and intelligent design as God's design. And mm-hmm. we start looking at it like that. You start mm-hmm. finding out all this fascinating stuff about, you know, take just a woodpecker, for example, the fact that it's got to have this special cushioning so that it doesn't, you know, when it bangs its head repetitively into the tree, it doesn't lose consciousness. So it's got this special shock absorber.
Right. It's got a long tongue that wraps up around the back of its head. And we start looking at the uniqueness of things like that and how they fit together. It really is miraculous.
And it really does bring back a sense of wonder. And so in my older age, as I was teaching them, I recovered this sense of wonder that had been driven out from me by this drab, dulled down skeletal version of biology.
Well, I mean, I've talked about this before, too. When you're looking at biology and aliens and all that, and you're thinking to yourself, well, somebody was saying that they believe that the anthropomorphic alien is the alien that's going to show the most intelligence. And I go, how dare they say that? Because, you know, there was a study done that said science fiction movies, the only aliens we care about are the anthropomorphic ones. Otherwise, we don't care. And one of the movies they made out was Contact, where the septopods were there and no one cared about them because they weren't human looking.
Mm-hmm.
And I was saying, yeah, it's the same thing. I mean, it's going to be a hard sell if Donald Trump gets in the White House and he introduces us to the new alien and he looks like a lobster. You know, this guy's not going to eat you. But what are you going to do now that you've met him and everybody's running to get the butter because they want to eat him?
What if the alien is orange?
We have to. What if it's orange? What if he looks like Trump? I don't know. But that's the whole thing, is that our interpretation of such things, we'll see something if it looks like a spider. We'll already go evil, evil. Again, back to the whole demon thing in mm-hmm. childhood Zen and how they had to relearn that this medieval concept of the demon was the alien. It's creepy, but that's the thing. We have so many ideas of what things look like and what they represent that something coming down with horns or pointy ears or whatever is going to definitely create a cognitive dissonance. It's just really going to mess up a lot of things, I think.
Yeah. Well, as always, Clyde, it has always been a fascinating discussion to talk to you about anything, whether we're talking about politics, economics, or the supernatural stuff that is out there. It's always interesting to get your take on things. And so glad to have you back.
I appreciate that.
And thank you for putting up groundzeroplus.com. And again, you spell out zero and you spell out plus. People go take a look at that, and you'll find some of my stuff there, as well as many, many other people that are there. And so glad that you're back.
Yeah.
Hope that you're going to recover fully if you're not already fully recovered. You sound like you're fully recovered.
I'm fully recovered. So there's some things that are anchoring me to the bed. So I got to go back to bed in a little bit.
That'll take a while. That'll take a while. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. So,
well, I hope you recover fully. Thank you so much for joining us again. Clyde Lewis.
Thank you, David.
It is groundzeroplus.com. Thank you, Clyde.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project, to make sure the commoners own nothing, and the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.